originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four. We are back together again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and happy to have you with us as we continue to edge closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships just up the road at Churchill Downs. Those coming your way November 2nd and November 3rd. And we thought it would be kind of nice to focus on a trainer on the program here tonight who is going to have a horse running in the Breeders' Cup. At least that's the plan here with just about, Jude, a couple of weeks left to go. Not even a couple of weeks now. We're down to 9 days, 4 hours, and 46 minutes.
And that's pretty close to the time that our guest horse is going to run, actually.
Yeah, and actually, that is from the time we are recording this program here on Wednesday morning, of course. So right. When people are listening to this, 6 to 7 Eastern on Wednesday night, we're even closer to the Breeders' Cup than we are now.
Yeah, it's getting here before you know it, and I imagine that everybody that has horses in the Breeders' Cup is on pins and needles. It's a very busy time right now in racing. The Fasig Tipton sale going on, and lots of action around town. A lot of people in town. It's getting to be exciting, and looking forward to it.
Well, trainer Jeremiah Engelhart is our guest on the program here tonight, and he has been on this show before. The last time he was on, as Jude pointed out to me before we went on air, was almost 5 years to the day. It was October 23rd of 2013 that he first joined us on Trainer Talk. We were out at Santa Anita that day. I remember he sat down. Jim Cassidy was also on that program with us. He sat down with us in person, and he is with us now yet again here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jeremiah, welcome, my friend. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad that you kept it right back to almost the same exact time when you had me on before, and this way, hopefully, the results will stay the same. I'd rather not have the drama of being put up by DQ, but I hope it just brings me good luck.
Yeah, good point. We figured we'd try to help you out there because after you did join us on this show, Breeders' Cup Week 2013, you did win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies with Rhea Antonia, and as you just pointed out, did it on DQ. So maybe a little better result this year with your juvenile turf contender 40 under. Maybe you don't have to sweat out the DQ.
That'd be nice. Although, you know what? Like you said, you're on pins and needles this whole week, just making sure everything goes as planned. And, you know, so right now everything's going very well, and hopefully he gets to run his race on Friday.
He's been very impressive his last two starts, and it looks like he's coming into the race the right way.
I think so. You know, his first work back after the Pilgrim win was probably my most impressive work with him so far. And I really tried to gear him down a little bit in his last work in Saratoga on the grass, but he's just a horse that seems like with a little bit of experience in the grass, it seems to help him kind of bring out his potential that we thought he had.
Yeah, he's been rock solid his last two starts. He breaks his maiden at Saratoga two races ago on August 25th. He comes back and wins that Grade 3 Pilgrim on September 29th, his only loss coming in his debut at Saratoga on July 28th of this year. How'd you get him beat first time out?
Oh, that's usually not that too hard to do. I guess, you know, putting him on dirt was one way I could do it, and letting him draw the rail was probably the other way. And then, of course, I had to go to my brother's wedding that day too, so I'm sure that wasn't, you know, I didn't really draw that up, like, or coach probably drew that up a little bit different than I did after his first race.
Well, you know, you put him on the turf, and it was an entirely different scenario. Do you think that was because of the grass, or was it the distance, or what do you think caused that great form reversal?
I would say right now it's probably more the turf than anything. It could be the distance. You know, he was never really precocious where, you know, I thought he would just out sprint horses in his first start. I definitely thought he'd run better than he did. You know, at some point we'd probably try him back on the dirt, you know, going long and see what he did or does. But, you know, right now we're just going to roll with what he likes to do, and that's the grass. And I've had a couple people, Maggie Wolfendale was one of them, that, you know, I remember her telling me after his first race that she thought he'd be a little bit more, that he looked turfy. And she's got a really good eye, and I kind of, you know, agreed with her more so, well, hopefully after the race, because he needed some excuse.
Yeah, Jeremiah, what does that mean when people say looks turfy? What's a turfy horse look like?
I still probably have not, I don't know myself, but, you know, you get people that, I mean, Maggie, she looks at a lot of horses every day. You know, she does a really good job there with her show at Naira. You know, I just think if you see those type of horses, you know, she's going to see a lot of, you know, whether it's Chad Brown, you know, and a lot of his turf horses, the way they look, or, you know, maybe that's just something that they see. I don't. You know, the only turf I saw when I was growing up was in the infield at Finger Lakes, and we usually couldn't run on that. So, you know, you kind of have to, you know, do a little bit more research and a little bit, it comes with a little bit more experience to see, you know, that turf look, I guess.
Sometimes turf horses aren't the best looking horses. I found that to be true when I worked at Keeneland. I would go to the paddock pretty much every race you know, you see the horses that run on the dirt, a lot of them are, you know, very typey, thoroughbred-looking horses. Then the grass horses come, and even the ones that run in the graded stakes, they look kind of dumpy. They just kind of walk around there. There's very few, I think, that are really super impressive-looking horses on the grass. A Point of Entry comes to mind as a beautiful turf horse, but for a lot of them, especially the ones that run a long distance, they're not that attractive.
Yeah, I thought I saw that too when I went to Hong Kong. Like, I remember there was one filly that I can't remember her name right now that was out there that was a, you know, world famous filly on the turf, and the trainer actually let me walk her around, and I got to, you know, graze her and pet her and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, holy cow, this is I would have never thought this is what this filly looks like. But I have heard other people say that too, Jude.
Visiting with trainer Jeremiah Engelhart on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on HRRN. Jeremiah, 40 under, was purchased at the Fasic Tipton Saratoga sale. Are you the one who picked her out, or him out? And if so, what did you see?
No, I got to look at him after Robbie Medina and Gene Riccio picked him out for Coach Parcells. And all I had to do was just—I didn't even have to say yes or no. Robbie liked him enough, but when I did get to see him, I did like, you know, I saw what those guys saw, and you know, and I actually thought he was a little, you know, at the time he had to have a little bit of imagination, you know, because he was kind of an immature-looking horse, and there's probably a little bit more black tie affair there than Uncle Mo, but you know, he. What Robbie and Gene saw originally with him is kind of what we thought he would do now, and it's nice that it's worked out.
What's it like training for Bill Parcells?
I would imagine as players could probably say the same. I guess it's pretty similar to, you know, being one of his players. You know, he puts a lot into it, and this is why he is in the game. He wants to have the, you know, the nice horses on the big stage, and you know, this is a Super Bowl for him. And I can see, even if I wasn't a Giants fan growing up and I idolized him growing up, it's kind of surreal for me, because if I would have known this, you know, when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, I probably would have made a bigger stink of trying to get, you know, get him back in the game then. But it's been, you know, there's just no, I can tell why was a successful coach, and everything he puts into football, I think he puts the same into his horses.
Yeah, you see him up at Saratoga, you know, pretty much every morning, you know, watching the works and you know, watching his horses go. And I mean, it's great. Does he give you a lot of input, or is he kind of a more of a? I can't imagine him being laid back. You got to be the laid back guy in that group.
Yeah, I don't know. He's definitely. I would not say laid back. I don't know if that laid back is ever described him. You know, one thing that in one of our early conversations, I think this might even been before I even trained for him, but just one of the times I talked to him out at Saratoga, we had a conversation about seeing similarities in certain horses and comparing the two sports, horse racing and football. And I thought it was pretty interesting that, you know, he would reference himself, Bill Belichick, and certain players they saw, like Wayne Krabet, ends up being Wes Welker or Amendola, or, you know, Mark Bavaro ends up being Gronkowski, you know, Lawrence Taylor. I don't know if anyone could ever emulate him, but it's Willie McGinnis. It's, you know, Harry Carson might be Teddy Bruschi. You know, I think the similarities between the two sports and being able to recognize, you know, talent and seeing traits in certain horses and football players, I think there's a lot of similarity there.
Jeremiah, you said growing up as a Giants fan that you idolized the coach, Bill Parcells, and now you're training for him. You're the one kind of calling the shots and giving him the advice on what you think might be best for his horses. What's that like?
Well, I remember a famous football coach saying one time when I think he was coaching the New England Patriots, he said, you know, they want you to prepare this really nice feast, this nice meal, but they won't let you pick out the groceries. I've had to use that a couple times on him because I know it was him that said it when he was at the Patriots. So a couple times when I've liked a horse or something like that, I've said to him, I says, you know, you want me to prepare this really nice meal, but I can't pick out the groceries. And, you know, he gets a good chuckle out of it. But, you know, that's just somewhat of the banter that we have back and forth. And I think he, you know, deep down, he kind of, you know, when you're in the sport for that long in locker room and stuff like that, you're looking for something like that too in your next career, whatever you decide doing. And I think he probably enjoys a little bit of that, you know, between him and I, you know, that kind of humor.
I can remember visiting with Coach Parcells for an interview a few years back at the Oklahoma training track at Saratoga one morning. Shug McGahey set it up for us. They're very good friends. And
yeah,
he was all business. I remember that. He was great. It was a really good interview. But he showed up. He walked over to me, did our pleasantries. He sat down, put the microphone, the headsets on, did the interview, took the headsets off, went back to his truck, and that was it. Yeah. He was very business. Is that his approach to racing as well?
He is extremely businesslike, very organized. Every horse he has it written down in a, you know, in a book that he carries around with him like a Bible. You know, he could tell you what he paid for this horse 10 years ago, what this horse did on this day. I mean, he's very organized. He's very businesslike. And it helps me a little bit too, because after seeing what he puts into it and how he's been successful, it, you know, makes you kind of want to, you know, maybe I got to do things this way. Maybe I need to be a little bit more serious with this or that. And when he talks, you listen, and it's been beneficial for me to be able to train for him.
Have you thought about what it might be like to win a Breeders' Cup race for the man you grew up idolizing?
Not just till this second. I guess it would be very special, you know. But, you know, every time I know what he puts into it. And even when he wins, I know it's special for him because, you know, here's a guy that you know, coached football and one of the majority of his games and, you know, was a winner, And now he's in a sport where you're considered successful if you win 20-25% of the time. So, you know, I've actually had to use that on him a couple times. Like, hey, listen, you know, I'm not going to have your overall record as a, you know, as a trainer like you did as a football coach. And, you know, he understands that, but he puts a lot into it. He wants to win, and, you know, that's kind of his MO, and that's what's made him successful throughout life.
Yeah, you see a lot of people that have been involved in sports that own horses. They love the competition. It's like it's a great outlet for somebody that retires from being in the vanguard every weekend, or, you know, in baseball players' sense, every day pretty much. And I think when you do retire, you miss that. You miss the competition. You miss the camaraderie of the clubhouse and all of that. And I think racing has a lot of those facets to it. So the people in sports, they gravitate to that to get that buzz back.
Yeah, I agree. Even for guys that, you know, growing up, like, I mean, I played in high school. I was, you know, football, basketball, baseball, played a little football in college. But that, even me, like, that's, I'm competitive. Like, that, there's, I feel the same way about a maiden 5,000 claimer at Finger Lakes as I do winning a stake in New York. Like, you don't want to lose. And, you know, you try to do your job where you set yourself up to win. And I agree. Like, I think guys that have been in that position that he has, or, you know, when they lose that, they need something to kind of have that, to get those competitive juices going again. You know, there's a big void there, I think, when they leave a sport, whether it's professional, college, or just that, maybe anything in life. I probably put the same into, like, adult ed basketball that I played, you know, from 20 to 40 years old. You know, I was competitive. We're playing to 7. I wanted to win. It didn't matter. Like, if, you know, no one's watching or nothing, you still want to win.
Jeremiah Engelhart with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You're listening to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jeremiah, having already been to the Breeders' Cup and won a Breeders' Cup race, how much does that experience of having been there, done that, help you as you prepare this time to go down that road again?
Yeah, definitely being there. I've been there a couple times now, and that, it's, you know, that weight's gone of trying to win your first one. But it does help probably fine-tune what you do the next time you go there, to try to, you know, prepare to try to win another one. And, you know, this is probably going to be my most realistic shot I've had so far in the Breeders' Cup. I think Rio was 27-1 and Tamron Hall was probably 28-1. You know, this horse, he's 40 under, is going to be a little bit better of a price, but, you know, there's definitely, not that there's always pressure, but it doesn't feel like pressure. You know, you're still just doing your job. You know, in this game, you realize anything can go wrong at any time. You know, you just got to plan the best you can for the race. And usually, you know, everything takes care of itself. I've been very lucky to have a good staff that, you know, they know the routine. They know what I expect. And, you know, like, I'm able to be at a sale right now while my horses are back at the over in Churchill. I went over there this morning, but, you know, they're going to be feeding them tonight and stuff like that. So it does help that, you know, being there. But this is what we do. This is what we want. This is where we want to succeed. And so you try to take the bull by the horns a little bit and map out a plan and go from there.
You've gotten a lot more active the last few years since we had you on the last time, and you've been on a tremendous roll this year. It's been pretty nice. Better horses, better clients, both. What are you thinking?
A combination of everything. I've been very lucky with the clients I've had, you know, and then the clients that I've gained in the last few years too. Like, even from when I first started at Finger Lakes till now, I still train for the same people. I'm very blessed when it comes to that. I get to, wake up every morning and do something that I love. It doesn't feel like work. The clients have trusted me to train the horses the right way and bring them into races the right way. They know that I'm going to make mistakes, and you know, probably made a few more mistakes, you know, 5-10 years ago that I do now. But you know, I'm very blessed when it comes to the clients and my staff. Like, I've had assistants that have been with me for a while, and people on the team that have been with me for a while, and when it, you know, it just all, you know, kind of works together. And it's, you know, I'm very lucky because I know how hard it is to be able to get that.
It sounds like you've kind of carried your clients along with your success, where they've gotten better horses because of you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think with, you know, buying, I've really tried to focus on buying young horses and bringing them up and you know, that way. And I've had a lot of help, you know, with that, with, you know, people I've put myself in place with. Travis Durr at Webb Carroll's Training Center, we work the sales together. You know, there's probably not a horse I buy that I don't get his stamp of approval on. You know, Jimmy Krupe at Krupe's Newcastle, he breaks horses for Al Gold, Niall Brennan, like, you know, guys that have a lot of experience. Greg and Karen Dodd, I've worked with them now for the last, you know, year or two with the sales at Southern Chase Farm. I'm just very lucky with the people that I've been able to look at horses with, and we've had a decent track record of bringing up horses to the races, and it seems like, yeah, it's helped my clients, you know, maybe get a little bit better horse than they would have before. It's funny you say that, because Jonathan Thomas and I were talking this morning about Chad and how I kind of really, I look at his operation, Chad Brown, and I just think he runs a really good operation, and he's really cultivated his clients to where, you know, he's had his owners get better horses from his, you know, from what he does. Like, you know, you look at Saul Kuhlman, Bob Edwards, you know, there's, you know, Klarovich. There's a lot of people that in Chad's program is gotten to another level with him at the helm. And you have to really tip your cap to that, because he's strict in his ways. He likes to do things a certain way, and you know, that's helped his clients, you know, move forward, and hopefully maybe it can help mine too.
Yeah, you've won more graded stakes races this year, Jeremiah, than any other single year throughout your career. You've won three in 2018, the Grade 3 Troy Handicap with Sandy Slough. We talked about the Pilgrim with 40 under, and then the Grade 2 Adirondack Stakes with Sue's Fortune. So it's been a tremendous year. How do you describe the Jeremiah Englehart philosophy or approach to training racehorses?
I think there's probably a lot that I just, from my father, Chris, that I just pull from. You know, you learn so much as you go. You know, honesty is the first thing my dad ever told me. He's like, listen, if you're not honest, you'll never succeed in this game. He goes, it's a game where there's a lot of people that probably aren't honest. And, you know, that's the main thing. You know, the other thing is having, you know, the ability to find out what it is each horse likes to do to prepare for a race. You know, some horses I don't train that hard. Some horses I'm a little tougher on than others. You just got to find out kind of what they like to do. And then, you know, when you get them there, the hardest part is staying there. Like, I look at, like you mentioned, some of the graded stake races that this year, and I sit there and think, well, geez, you know, was that race a fluke? You know, what happened there? So I guess having that, you know, attitude of you're only as good as your last race is something that would be important too, because if I lose a couple races, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, but, oh, I gotta figure this out. This shouldn't have happened this way, or, you know, something along those lines.
Well, the conditions have a lot to do with that, too. I mean, as the horses start winning, the races get tougher, and you start to second guess yourself. But really, it's the horse that has to do the running. Gary Jones pointed that out to me several years ago when I was training, and it's so true. I mean, you come into a meet and sometimes things are going great the first part of the meet, and then the last half of the meet you wonder why you can't win a race, but your horses don't have any conditions left.
Yeah, I've had that happen to me a few times. Last year during Belmont, I think probably more so than any, I had a really nice Belmont spring meet, and the condition book came out for Saratoga. And I said to myself, oh, my God, I don't know if I can win a race. And, you know, I was lucky enough. I did get off to a little bit of a slow start. But then, you know, we picked up a couple races here and there. But that is very true. When those horses succeed, they got to run. They usually run tough, have to run tougher.
Jeremiah, you mentioned being at the horse sale. You're at the Fasig Tipton sale here in Lexington. You're looking for the next superstar, no doubt, for your stable. When you're there, you're looking at horses, what are some of the characteristics that you're looking to see in those young horses?
I think you want to see some of the things you see in other good horses you have. You know, whether it's a sire that, you know, might pass on a certain look to one of its foals or a mare that you know, might want to pass on something that if she was a good racehorse and this maybe she looks a little bit more like the mare, maybe she brings more of her characteristics. You know, you look at the shoulder angle, the hip, and you know, anything along those lines that I've seen from good horses before, you know, how they walk. And you know, there's a lot of good people out here doing that. One of the best I think that I've ever seen is Mike Ryan. And you know, when I've been lucky enough to be the underbidder on a lot of his horses he's bought, and you know, it's helped me actually develop a little bit of a relationship with him, and where I get to, you know, every now and then I'll try to pick his brain a little bit on some of the things that he looks for. But you know, those are kind of some of the characteristics that you look for.
He's trainer Jeremiah Engelhardt, our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. We're going to go ahead and get to a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with more. Second half of Trainer Talk is next. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on HRN. On November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Fasig Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at FasigNovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Hello, this is Stuart Morris. I've spent the last 30 years of my life in the thoroughbred industry. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by great mentors and great clientele base and phenomenal horses as I've come up. I started out with my father at Highclere and was fortunate to raise Silver Bullet Day. I sold the likes of Captain Steve and Silver Bullet Day. 3 years ago, I started my own consignment and have been very fortunate to have a lot of success in a short amount of time due to the great clientele base I have and the good folks that send me really quality horses that are raised the right way and get into good hands for us. We hang our shingle at most every sale east of the Mississippi River, and we hope to see you somewhere to buy your next stake horse at Stuart Morris Consignment.
This This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Spirit Animal still about 7 lengths behind, starting to put in a mild bid as they come to the top of the stretch. Some Like It Hot Brown off the turn in front, Social Paranoia 2 lengths behind. And then it's 40 under and Opry on the far outside coming into the final furlong. Some Like It Hot Brown still there. 40 under now ranges up alongside. And Manny Franco and 40 under have taken the lead in late stretch. And 40 under takes the Pilgrim. Some Like It Hot Brown was second best, Social Paranoia was third, and Opry was fourth.
Larry Colmus with a call. That was the Grade 3 Pilgrim earlier this year, won by the son of Uncle Mo, 40 under, who was trained by our good friend Jeremiah Engelhart, who is our special guest tonight on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Welcome back to the program. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. If you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show. All of our shows, they're there for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, you heard that call and you heard Larry Colmus say Manny Franco getting the victory aboard 40 under. As hot as Jeremiah has been throughout 2018, Manny Franco has been equally as hot. And Jeremiah, you picked the right jockey for this horse.
Yeah, he's Manny has fit him very well. He actually breezed him a couple times early on before we ever ran him. And I wasn't sure, I wasn't overly confident that he had the confidence in the horse that I did. But I kind of, you know, sometimes that happens with young horses. They don't really show what they can really do until they get into competition. And like you said, Manny is one of the hottest jocks right now in the country, and he's a rider that is going to be a superstar in the sport. He's a great athlete, and he's a kid that just every time you have him aboard a horse, you know he's going to try to get you in the right spot. He thinks about everything. He does his homework. He's just a really good kid too.
He seems like a little Johnny Velasquez-like in the way that he plans and positions the horses. He always seems to have the horse in a position to win. The horse might not be good enough, but it's not really his fault, you know, if the horse can't do it. But he gives them their best chance to win, and I really like that about him.
Yeah, every time. I would say if there's a race where you're surprised by a horse the way it ran, if it didn't run to its ability, you don't think that, well, it's something that Manny did, you know, or at least he will say, listen, I might have made a mistake by doing this or that. But, like, you know, talking about Johnny and those kids idolizing Johnny, Ramon, you know, the Javiers, like being able to work in that environment with all the time with those guys just helps, you know, the Jose Ortizes, the Irad Ortizes, the Manny Francos, the Dylan Davis, you know, any of those kids that are in, you know, up and coming now, having those guys and, you know, being able to compete with those guys has to help them as they get older and learn from them. And I think Ramon was kind of one of those guys that set that tone in the jocks room. And those kids remember, you know, how professional he was, and I just think he couldn't have asked for a better, you know, role model. And, you know, Manny too, he's got Angel Cordero as his agent, so there's another one you can learn some more tricks of the trade, you know, by having Angel as your agent too. And you know, it's just he surrounds himself with the right people for sure.
Yeah, Angel knows more tricks than anybody else, I think.
I tell you, there might not be a better person to listen to stories from than Angel Cordero. I as a kid growing up and watching him and other horses, like some of the stuff that he says, he'll have you in stitches.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, we were in Saratoga in a Mexican restaurant, and I didn't even care about eating. I just wanted to sit there and listen to Angel tell more stories. It was great.
Yeah.
You have a lot of kids, and you're a world class dad. Has that helped you with your horses? Have an understanding, you know, about them a little bit more? I think it makes a big difference. But I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky too. My father, I have five brothers and sisters, and you know, he always made time for us, like whether it was the sporting events or, you know, birthdays, holidays, whatever. He was always there for us, and I kind of always wanted to do that with my kids. And you know, it's having clients that understand what my priorities are and how I run my business. And you know, there are some similarities to, you know, it kind of opens your eyes a little bit. I tell everyone when they have their first kid, I said, listen, your life will change forever, and it'll be for the for the good. I mean, it's just, you know, I was just talking to Nick Hessler the other day, you know, because him and his wife are expecting, and it does. You get a different perspective, not only on life, but just everything that you're kind of doing professionally, and maybe how you might have a little bit more patience in handling something now inside my business because I've had kids. And you know, I always kid around with Al Gold, because Al said he came to me asked me to train his horses because God told him that I had 15 kids and he had to, you know, support me. So anytime we ever get into a discussion or something, I'm like, hey, listen, you know, you can't leave. Who wants to go against God? I wouldn't want to be that guy. You know? So, you know, yeah, there is definitely a lot of similarities and things that you learn as, you know, as you get older too. Like, it's just, yeah, I'm sure you guys could probably play back the interview I had 5 years ago to this one now. There's probably some things that, you know, even then I might have not said now that I said then, but, you know, it definitely helps you inside your business.
Jeremiah Engelhardt, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here tonight. If you are just joining us here on the show, Jeremiah is doing this interview from the Phasic Tipton sales grounds here in Lexington. He's at the Phasic Tipton October sale. There is a chance that he may have to leave abruptly to go bid on a horse. And if that's the case, we will let him go. But just a heads up there that may be the case, but we'll see. We'll go as long as we can here. Jeremiah, any future horse trainers among the children that you have?
I probably have. Right now, they all think they're going to be jockeys. genetics will definitely steer them out of that direction in the next few years. They all idolize Jose Ortiz, Irad Ortiz, Manny Franco. Now even my youngest now is starting to become a Dylan Davis fan after pat on the back. So right now they all think they're going to be jockeys. I have my oldest daughter, Raylin. She really wants to get into riding. We're going to get her signed up, you know, for lessons this year and up in Saratoga. Yeah. I was forced into the game at all, but I always enjoyed helping my parents when I was younger, you know, going into the barn and helping. I mean, I remember walking horses when I was six, seven years old. And I told myself with my kids, I it's not that I don't want them to be in the business, but I want them to know that they can do anything they want. And they don't have to be in the horse business. They all seem to enjoy it, which is nice, you know, because they're always watching the races and whatnot. But as they get older and want to help out, or, you know, I have no problem helping them with what they want to do with their career choices. But they do get a kick out of the barn and the horses.
Yeah, do they get super excited when you win?
Yeah. I don't usually try. I can't watch races around them much yet because they'll root against me if Jose's on one of their horses. And it just hasn't been something I've been able to overcome yet, as far as being very competitive and listen to my son say, come on, Jose. And I have someone else that's riding the horse and I'm running fourth and Jose's winning and they're screaming, yes, yes. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I'm your dad.
It sounds like you're going to have to put Jose under contract as the stable rider for you guys.
Yeah, I have to get Jose whenever I can get him, just because of my kids.
That's great.
That's great. Jeremiah Engelhardt here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. We started the show, Jeremiah, by touching on your Breeders' Cup victory in 2013, and we talked about the fact that you joined us on this show for the first time during Breeders' Cup week, right before you won that race. It was the Juvenile Fillies. It was with Rhea Antonia, who was put up via disqualification. Take us back to that moment and to that day as you're sitting there sweating out that inquiry after she comes storming down the stretch.
I'll tell you, it's a memory I'll never forget, which has been really nice that I brought it back up in my mind a few different times. But I remember watching the race, and I was rooting, and I don't usually root for my horses, and I was kind of jumping up and down rooting because I thought, okay, she's moving into third. She's all right. Maybe she got a shot to hit the board. Just don't fade and, you know, run bad. And then, oh, she's moving into second. And then there was a point where I really knew she was going to be either first or second. And I'm screaming. And I remember having the Mr. and Mrs. Broman in front of me. And they had, I think, Artemis Argatera. I forgot how to say her name.
Yeah.
In the race. And I'm thinking, oh, man, don't scream and root when you're running well and they're not. And so I stopped rooting and then just watched the stretch run all the way home. And I was okay with being second. I'm like, well, she ran well. I thought for sure she was second. And I came down on the track, and one of the owners is like, you got to claim foul. I'm like, I'm not going to claim foul in the Breeders' Cup. Are you kidding me? I didn't see anything. And then when Javier came back, he said to me, he's like, you know, she got bumped pretty good. And I think I would have won the race. And I claimed foul. So now I'm watching the numbers tick on the board. And I think maybe like 2.5 hours went by where I'm standing there like watching the numbers click on the board. And I remember seeing the replay the first time. I know it wasn't 2.5 hours. It just felt that way. But I remember seeing the replay for the first time in the head on. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to take this horse down. I knew it right away. And then I'm sitting there for a moment and, you know, I always remember looking up to the sky. I'm like, Uncle Lee, if you're up there right now, and he was someone I idolized growing up as far as, you know, the horse racing. And, you know, he rode my first horse in the mornings. He was my exercise rider, and he was killed in an accident at Finger Lakes Racetrack, I think 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. And I the only time I've ever done this, I looked up and I'm like, listen, if there's ever a time you're going to like help me out in this game, might maybe try it right now. And then sure enough, right afterwards they put my number up, and I remember hearing Trevor Denman going, ladies and gentlemen, and I knew there was going to be a disqualification. And I'm like, man, I better go look for my wife, because she always yells at me that I'm not her first phone call, like she's not my first phone call after a big race or something like that. So the first thing I want to do is go find my wife, give her a hug, and that's all I remember from there.
Now, a spectacular moment for Jeremiah Englehart, that first Breeders' Cup victory back in 2013 with Rhea Antonia. As you were telling that story, Jeremiah, one thing that came to mind, Kevin Costner, one of my favorite Kevin Costner movies is For Love of the Game. And yeah, you were talking about how they told you should claim foul after the Breeders' Cup. And you said, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to claim foul in the Breeders' Cup. And people will be listening to this going, why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he want to win a Breeders' Cup race?
Yeah.
It's about that love of the game that we all have, and it's about that respect for the sport. You don't want to disrespect the sport by doing something like that on a big stage. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if Javier felt like he was fouled, he more than anyone there is going to know if he was fouled or not. Now, I can't say that I have not claimed foul, because I have claimed foul before, and even before that race and even after that race. But at the same time, like at that moment, like I didn't see enough where I, from my vantage point where I was watching the race, to think that it was even a foul. And I don't believe I would ever do it. There's so much on the line at that stage of the game and on that day that, you know, the jockeys are very professional. They're going to understand, you know, they have things to, you know, they can make more money if they win the race as well too. So I that wasn't really, that didn't cross my mind that I had to claim foul there.
It's like throwing the challenge flag in football, right? He didn't see enough from his vantage point to claim foul. Didn't
right.
know if he should do it. Javier talked him into it, said, okay, fine, I'll throw the flag.
Get a hold
right?
of the boys upstairs, yeah. Well, you know, that's impressive to me in itself, the fact that you know, didn't want to claim foul. But the fact that you thought about the Bromans in this during the stretch run,
yeah,
this is what makes you so great. And well, you know, I tell everybody what a great guy you are, and that just underlines it.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Jude. I mean, for me, I always like something.
I don't say that to anybody, by the way, Jeremiah.
Yeah,
I don't tell anybody that.
A lot more honest. I don't know. I think it has to do with the way I was brought up. You know, my dad always told me, you know, blessed is the man that goes unseen. You know, I just feel like there's, you know, there's always a time and place for everything. And I've been in those situations before. I've lost plenty of races, and I know that feeling. I know how I feel when it happens. And, you know, there's a time and a place for everything.
I used to train for a guy. And one of his best friends was alive in the pick six and was running against us. And they came down to the line to finish our horse and the guy with the pick six. And he was rooting for the pick six, $164,000. And my client kicked him out of the box. And I was appalled. I go, the guy just won $164,000. The purse on this race is only $25,000. What are you doing?
Yeah, I got a swift reminder this morning because I was really sure I was going to win the Mega Millions last night, and I didn't win that, so I had to go back to work this morning too. But it's funny you say that, Jude, because I remember I was working on the starting gate at Finger Lakes. I think probably I was 16, 17 years old, and we'd have a pick six up there, and we'd always, you know, get a ticket to, you know, off the record, of course. We'd get a ticket together, you know, of the guys on the. And one day it was like a $200,000 pick six was up there, which was amazing. It never got that high. And we played it, and I left one of my dad's horses off the ticket. We singled a horse that was like 2-5, didn't think he could beat. And I went back to my dad's barn that afternoon, like, man, I almost hit the pick six. He goes, well, why were you playing the pick six? Like, oh, I don't know. It was, you know, the price was nice. I thought we'd get a good, you know, kickback from it. And he goes, well, what happened? I says, well, I left Turk's Hero, which was my dad's horse, off the ticket. And he goes, well, that serves you right. And I'm like, oh, you know, there's a life lesson right there. You know, I could have made probably $20,000 at that time, you know, being 16, 17 years old. And that would have been, you know, that would have been well spent probably a month later. But my dad had enough sense to tell me, well, it serves you right for leaving your old man off the ticket.
Yeah, and, you know, for people that don't realize, your dad, Chris Englehart, has had one heck of a career in his own right. He's trained more than 4,200 winners in that career. So he knows how to get a good horse ready and get him to the races. And you've mentioned him multiple times throughout this show here tonight, Jeremiah, as being an influence on everything that you're doing now as you move forward. Talk about that influence that he's had and the things that he's meant to you and to your career.
Well, he's just been, I mean, I've been very lucky to be able to start a career in this business and have someone that I can go to at any time of the day, night, you know, whenever, to ask a question or to seek advice. Like, it's not a lot of people get that. And I've been able to, I still do it with him all the time. Like, I you know, hey, what about this situation? Or, you know, and now there's even times when I see him doing to me too, which is really rewarding because it, you know, that you've kind of done some things that he respects too. And it's always been there. Like my dad, he's been my best friend for as long as I can remember. And to have that support from him and even my mom too, she runs his stable there at Finger Lakes. And it just to have that support is one of the big reasons I am where I am right now. And hopefully I can continue to build on that, what he's, you know, kind of helped me develop.
Did you work for anybody else besides him?
I work for actually Mike Farrell Sr., who my dad worked for too. I wanted to get Mike. Is he is to me probably in the top three trainers I've ever got a chance to work around in my life, and he's a very good conditioner. There's a lot that I learned from him as far as just conditioning the animal. And you know what, he was a bodybuilder when he was younger, and you know, a lot of things I learned from him. I worked for Mike Hushin for about 9 months while one of his assistants was on maternity leave, and I always thought that he was probably the best manager of an operation. Like, the way he ran his stable was just, it was meticulous. Like, everything was coordinated perfectly. And I still do things now that Mike taught me how to do when I was working for him. And I got to work with Kenny McPeak too, which was another good, you know, learning experience, you know, how to put yourself in those situations. I mean, my first two horses I got to work around with Kenny was Take Charge Lady and Repent. I mean, and Harlan's Holiday when he was there. It's just those, being around those horses helped me, you know, kind of how do you take care of the horses when you have them in your own stable. So I've been very lucky on, you know, and one guy, like, I could call, like, Todd Pletcher has helped me many a times, like, just, you know, asking questions. And, you know, he's an amazing, amazing trainer in this sport. I mean, I've been able to call him anytime I've ever wanted, and he's always took his time out to answer questions. And, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to have the supporting cast that I've had.
Yeah, I think there's a reason that trainers like that are successful. Guys like Todd and Kenny, Bob Baffert, anytime that I've ever gone to them and asked them about coming on the show, doing an interview, anything, they've always made time for it. And I think that those trainers that are at that level, they understand there's an obligation that comes along with it, and they've always been extremely accommodating. And I think that's part of the reason that they're where they are today in the sport.
Yeah, I agree. I actually, there's a lot of similarities too. Like, I remember watching in, I think it was the NLCS, they were talking about that on the Major League, after the whole Manny Machado thing. You know, a lot of the old players were upset because he doesn't understand what they sacrificed for him to do what he can do today. So I think there's a lot of similarities in that too now, where, you know, I find myself doing it with, whether it's my younger brother or one of my peers. Like, I think it's important to, you know, we're all competing against one another, but at the same time, we have an obligation to try to make the sport as good as we possibly can. And, you know, if there's someone I can help, I've had plenty of help along the way. If there's someone I can help, I always try to take time to help them figure things out as well.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned when you won your first Breeders' Cup, you said your filly moved up to second, and you go, now just don't fade. That was your comment, right? And that's how all trainers think. Like, you know, they don't think, oh, yeah, you only got one more to pass. You're thinking, just don't fade.
Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Don't let my training catch up to me at the 16th of a mile out, you know?
And again, because 80% of the time, that's what usually happens. You know, your horse gets up, oh, that's great, he's going to give me a great thrill, and then, or he's on the lead, and like, hold on, and then he fades away. Like, so that's, you know.
And we all know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all know it. Richard Mandela, Hall of Fame trainer, he said the pain of losing is 10 times more than the joy of winning. That's his philosophy when he gets out of bed every morning. You know that, and I know something's going to be wrong when I go to the barn. I mean, that's a hell of a way to live, right? But we all know that, and I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, a lot of trainers are willing to help somebody else, because they know how hard it is. It's the hardest thing that you can do. There's nothing more difficult than training horses, because there's so much luck involved. First of all, you got to get the horse, and then you got to overcome all the things that you have to overcome in the mornings, and you get the horse to the races, and then you need a perfect trip. You know, because you didn't have Jose Ortiz on your horse. So, I mean, there's so many things, and we all know that. So, like, when somebody's having an issue or a problem, you know, you want to help them because you know what they're going through.
Yeah. I think the most successful people in any sport are the ones that can get back up after they've been knocked down. You know, after a big blow or a big punch, like, you have to be able to take punches. And, you know, just a real quick story. I had a horse that I owned with Al Gold, the past winner. He ran second to one of Todd's nice horses, ran a 7 on the rags. I mean, they were talking about, you know, maybe being worth $750,000. I'm thinking, geez, Al's going to let me sell my 30%, and I can, there's my down payment on my house. And a week later, the horse you know, ends up getting an infection in the hind leg, and he's in a clinic, and we had to put him down a week later. And, you know, it was just one of those things where that experience is going to make you, you know, maybe that much better on the next one, or be able to handle the next one that much better. But you definitely have to be able to roll with the punches, and because it is a sport that is always, there's always going to be there something there that's, you know, there's going to be bad news, and you have to be able to handle it. And hopefully I don't keep on talking about bad news and then something happens this week before the race. I've been already knocked on wood about 15 times during the whole interview.
Yeah, you and Nick Zito. Knock wood, right?
Yeah.
Jeremiah Engelhart here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Just a couple of minutes left here, Jeremiah. We'll wrap it up by asking you some of the other interests and hobbies that you have. If you can find time to get away from the racetrack, or if you're going to watch a sporting event, obviously you're a big football guy. You referenced the World Series or the baseball playoffs that have been going on. What are some of the other things that you enjoy doing, some of the other hobbies that you have?
Well, I would always say it'd be football, basketball, baseball, anytime I can get to one of those sporting events. But now it's that and combining it with my kids. Last week before I came to Lexington, my kids and I, we started having a scrimmage where they're old enough now where we play, I bought pylons like the NFL has, minus the cameras inside them, and put them in my backyard. And it's been fun just to go out there, and I'm the all-time quarterback. And we've actually, one team's Notre Dame, the other team's the Giants. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a lot of fun to be able to do that stuff with my kids. And I went to a Giants and Saints game where I got to watch it on the sidelines. That was pretty cool too. You know, I've always been a big fan of sports and competition. So I guess anything that has a ball in it, or I guess I don't mind doing. But you know, I played, you know, football and baseball and basketball. I try to still play a little basketball here and there, but that's about it. You know, but mainly just my family. Like it's I get a big kick out of watching them grow up and some of the things that they do, and they just started playing some sports now, so I get to be one of those dads on the sideline that gets to watch, you know, their kids, you know, learn life.
Well, Jeremiah, we have gotten a big kick out of having you on the program here again tonight. Again, it's been too long. 5 years ago, the last time that you were on this show, it was right before Breeders' Cup. Turned out pretty good that year. All the best with 40 under in this year's Juvenile Turf. We'll be cheering for you, and we'll see you over at Churchill Downs.
Thanks, guys. Now, I know Jim Cassidy's coming on next, right?
Wait, wow, we might have to do that now, just for Jeremiah.
I'll tell you what, at least give him a phone call. All
right? Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
All right, Jeremiah Engelhart here on Trainer Talk. Wow, you don't think that guy's a rising star in this sport?
No, he's been for a long time.
Yep.
He's a great guy.
So good. By the way, yesterday, the anniversary of your first winner that you ever saddled as a trainer. Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. 38 years ago.
Yeah. All right. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. Thanks for joining us.